tensions remain high between the U.S. and Russia over an American spy drone crash over the Black Sea. The U.S. says it has evidence Russia caused the crash. New Zealand joins other Western countries to put a ban on China's popular social media app TikTok. And North Korea confirms it has fired its largest intercontinental ballistic missile as a tough response to military exercises by the US and the South. Our top story, the Pentagon has released a video it says provides evidence that a Russian fighter jet caused a US spy drone to crash into the Black Sea this week. The Pentagon says the video shows that the Russian fighter jet clipped the propeller of the American MQ-9 Reaper drone, causing its crash near Ukraine. The video was filmed by the drone, which the US says was on a regular reconnaissance mission in international airspace. Russia denies that and sees the incident as a provocation. Moscow says the aircraft went down after making, quote, sharp maneuvers. It has warned of a proportionate response in case of future provocations. That's why the U.S. says it will continue to fly and operate wherever international law allows. The incident was the first direct encounter between the two powers since the Ukraine war began in February last year. Italian Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni has met the relatives and victims and survivors, the relatives of victims and survivors, that is, of the migrant shipwreck off the country's southern coast in which scores of people died. The Meloni government has been under fire from the opposition and civil society groups since 3 weeks ago when the tragedy happened. Max Civilli reports from Rome.
On Thursday, a delegation of survivors and victims' families from last month's migrant shipwreck at Cutro in southern Italy met with Italian Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni and Foreign Minister Antonio Tajani. On February 26, over 80 people died after a rickety boat with about 200 migrants on board broke up in rough seas. 33 of the victims were minors. At least 16 people are still missing and feared dead. The shipwreck was one of the worst migration disasters in recent European history. No journalists were admitted at Thursday's meeting between Meloni and some of the relatives of the victims and survivors of the Cutro tragedy.
There must be a joint effort with other European countries when it comes to rescuing migrants in danger at sea. If the EU does not take concrete responsibility in governing the migration phenomenon, more tragedies will take place. Let's not forget that this massive influx of migrants began when Gaddafi was overthrown and killed in Libya in 2011.
In the past weeks, Italy has seen an increase in attempts to cross the central Mediterranean in a new shipwreck that took place about 100 miles off the Libyan coast. Between March 11 and 12, at least 30 migrants went missing and are thought to have died. The rescue operation was partially coordinated by the Italian Coast Guard. During a Q&A session in the lower house of parliament on Tuesday, Meloni and her government were accused of failing to offer timely assistance to smugglers' boats in distress and, in more general terms, of not doing enough to try and save people attempting to cross the Mediterranean Sea.
Not only Italy did its part, but it did it in an area outside its jurisdiction. The operation had been initially coordinated by the Libyan authorities.
Once and for all, Libyan authorities are not capable of providing safe and rescue assistance to migrants in line with international standards. The question here is if Italy is doing all it can to save human lives.
Since day one of its mandate, the Giorgia Meloni government has pledged to press ahead with an agenda aimed at stopping what it calls illegal migration. In January, the officials introduced a new code of conduct for humanitarian ships, making it much harder for NGO-run vessels to rescue migrants lost at sea. Lately, Rome has even tried to pass the buck on to others for the current Mediterranean migrant crisis. Earlier this week, the Italian government said the Russian private military company Wagner was behind the recent exponential surge in migrant boats from African coasts. The number of migrants reaching Italy's shores so far this year exceeds 20,000. Max Civili, Rome.
Elsewhere, New Zealand says it will ban China's popular social media app TikTok from lawmakers' devices, becoming the latest Western nation to put the restriction. Parliament officials say TikTok will be banned on all devices with access to the parliamentary network. They say the decision follows talks with colleagues across government and internationally. The restriction will begin at the end of this month. The US, Canada, Britain and the European Union have already banned the video sharing app from devices operated by government staff. They've all cited security concerns that the app can share user information with the Chinese government. TikTok has rejected that, saying it has spent billions of dollars on data security. Beijing also says the bans are politically motivated, with the West trying to hinder China's development. Windu Zhu is a senior fellow at the Pangol Institution. He says the US and its Western allies are struggling to compete with China, and explains how they are trying to confine Chinese development.
You know, you have to look further beyond this TikTok thing, you know, the U.S. Remember, this is all launched by the U.S. I call it a campaign, basically, against China, or a new Cold War by the Biden government against China, simply because they can't compete with China in terms of economy, in terms of technology. So there's a fear of complexity in Washington that they could lose the number one global power, you know, superiority. That's what they are concerned with. So they are doing whatever they can, basically fair and fair, to attack China. You know, the lies about Xinjiang, the attack over Hong Kong, and of course, sending weapons to Taiwan. At the same time, banning high-tech free trade, for example, trading in technology, and then attack Chinese company Huawei, remember. You know, they, until now, they provided zero evidence of what Huawei has done wrong. Simply, there's accusation of Huawei, what Huawei could do. And then, you know, they almost, of course, they destroyed Huawei in terms of this high-tech, obviously 5G mobile phone, because of the ban of the semiconductors. And now they are attacking TikTok for being too popular, for being too powerful.
Turning to North Korea now, which says its latest missile launch involved the country's largest intercontinental ballistic missile, calling it a serious warning to enemies. Pyongyang says the ICBM was fired during a drill to demonstrate a tough response posture to ongoing military exercises by the US and South Korea. During the launch, North Korea's leader, Kim Jong-un, accused the two countries of increasing tensions on the Korean Peninsula. The launch was the third missile test by North Korea this week. The U.S. and the South say their drills are essential for regional and global stability. However, North Korea considers them as a hostile act and a rehearsal for an invasion. Iran, China and Russia are holding joint military drills in the northern part of the Sea of Oman. The drills, dubbed Security Bond 2023, aim to safeguard peace, security and peace in regional waters. Our correspondent Mehdi Abbasian has more.
Chinese and Russian vessels have entered Iran's territorial waters to hold a joint maritime exercise in the Sea of Oman. Delegates from Pakistan and Kazakhstan navies will also be there as observers. China has dispatched a guided missile destroyer to the area, while Russia has sent a naval group that consists of a frigate and a medium sea tanker. At the first stage of the drill, the naval officers of the three countries reviewed episodes of the trilateral exercise on maps, received instructions, and held tactical briefings. Later, the naval commanders of the three countries held a joint presser. The Iranian Navy's deputy commander said the main aim of the joint exercise is to help safeguard security in the northern part of the Indian Ocean.
The northern part of the Indian Ocean is one of the most important maritime routes for international trade and transfer of energy. Therefore, providing security in combating piracy and terrorism requires cooperation among regional countries and allies with common interests in this region.
Meanwhile, Chinese and Russian Navy commanders said the joint exercise further demonstrates the preparedness of the participating countries to maintain security, and it will also deepen their practical cooperation. In an exclusive interview, Rear Admiral Tajuddini told Press TV that the trilateral drill helps protect peace and stability in the region.
The trilateral exercise of Iran, China, and Russia has a four-year-long history, and our goals are clear. Our motto is, together to provide peace and security. Therefore, we are only pursuing the interests of the Islamic Republic of Iran as well as collective interests of countries in the north of the Indian Ocean. We are cooperating with China and Russia in order to defend our interests and counter maritime piracy and terrorism.
This joint exercise is the third of its kind, following similar drills involving the Iranian, Chinese, and Russian navies in 2019 and 2022.
The main stage of the Security Bond 2023 exercises involve forces from the Marine and Airborne units of Iran's Navy and the IRGC, as well as Russian and Chinese flotillas. Matia Bosian from the location of the drill.
Israeli forces have shot dead four more Palestinians during an attack in the occupied West Bank city of Jenin. The Palestinian Health Ministry says five people were also wounded earlier. Israeli forces similarly injured several Palestinians in the city of Nablus. The regime's troops stormed the area to cover a number of Israeli settlers who were on their way to break into the archaeological site of Joseph's tomb. Israel has been conducting violent assaults on an almost daily basis since the formation of the regime's new far-right cabinet under Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Since the beginning of this year, nearly 90 Palestinians have been killed in the West Bank, either by the regime's troops or by settlers. Every year in March, since 2005, pro-Palestinian activists directed by the BDS movement hold activities and events against Israeli apartheid policies. Our correspondent Ola Al-Asi reports from Gaza.
The Israel Apartheid Week has started in Gaza and in many cities around the world. This is aimed at mobilizing grassroots support for the BDS campaign to isolate apartheid Israel in the global community, replicating the resistance movement against the South African apartheid.
The killing machine of apartheid Israel.
The week started with a message of solidarity to the Palestinians of the Gaza Strip from Mandela Mandela, the grandson of the South African leader Nelson Mandela.
We feel your pain and suffering and stand in solidarity with you in the struggle against the injustice and brutality imposed by the apartheid Israeli regime. We salute our heroes and martyrs of Gaza and the ordinary men and women, youth and children, who daily face the brutal killing machine of apartheid Israel. You are not alone.
As part of its events, the BDS chose to screen a movie about horror experienced by a Palestinian young girl during the Nakba. The ethnic cleansing of Palestinians by Zionists in 1948.
Well, I think the way Israel reacted to Farha is very typical of Zionist propaganda. They wanted to suppress the Palestinian voice. They didn't want us to tell our own narrative. And I think the best way of confronting this campaign of hate and racism is by producing more cultural products.
Palestinian institutions play an important role in informing people of the history of Palestine. through different mediums in order to build a generation that is capable of reclaiming its rights.
I think that the new generation is passionate about learning the truth and the history of the struggle, because during their entire life they have experienced both physical and structural violence perpetrated by the Israeli occupation. They want to know why they suffer, are not allowed to travel, and live in poverty. All this leads them to question the roots of all the problems.
The BDS movement has stressed the need to press ahead with the campaigns against the Israeli apartheid, especially because the regime has intensified its persecution to maintain a system of settler colonial oppression and domination over the Palestinian lives and land.
Recently, we witnessed a growing solidarity with the Palestinian people, especially when the new far-right fascist cabinet took office and Israeli massacre increased in the West Bank. We aspire to reach the international community, not only in the civil global community, to boycott, divest from and sanction Israel.
In Israel Apartheid Week, Palestinians reaffirmed their commitment to resisting occupation, exploitation, oppression and apartheid, like any other people, by all means permitted under the international law and the UN General Assembly resolution, which includes armed struggle. Ulal Al-Asi, Gaza.
Turning elsewhere now, three hospital workers in the U.S. state of Virginia have been charged with second-degree murder over the death of an African-American man earlier in March. Those charged were staff members of a state mental hospital in Petersburg. They were arrested on Thursday and are being held without bail over the case of Irvo Otenio. The 28-year-old black man died at the health center after he was transferred from a local jail because of his mental condition. A preliminary report by medical examiners shows he died of asphyxiation. In addition to the three hospital employees, seven sheriff's deputies were also charged with second-degree murder. The police officers have been accused of suffocating Otenio during the transfer. A video captured by the hospital's surveillance cameras was shown to the victim's family on Thursday. Iran has once again rejected Western countries' accusations about its involvement in the Ukraine conflict, reiterating its firm opposition to the war there. Foreign Minister Sami Abdullahian spoke with European Union Foreign Policy Chief Josep Borrell on the phone. Emir Abdullahian said, instead of leveling baseless accusations against Iran, the West must get Ukraine to present its documents. He also said that Iran always favors peace over war. Borrell, for his part, lauded Iran's efforts to help bring about peace in the region. The West has been accusing Iran of supplying drones to Russia for use in the Ukraine war. Tehran says it only provided Moscow with a limited number of drones before the war started. That brings an end to World News for this hour. Stay tuned.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us.
واقعیت زندگی
and try to apply them to our daily lives.
چجوری ممکنه؟
How is it possible?
از راه قرآن.
By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من این قدم آخر نیست.
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step, brothers, not the last one.
هو الذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين.
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth, that he may make it prevail over all religions, though the polytheists should be averse.
والذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله ولو كره المشركون.
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش، با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد، موسیقی خاصی دارد، روش خاصی دارد، اینها چیزای لازمی است.
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones.
اما این کافی نیست.
But it's not enough.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن. دوری از قرآن. از قرآن.
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran. 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 کتاب الله.
Path towards enlightenment.
In the name of God, the All Compassionate, the All Merciful. Salam and welcome to our latest episode of Path Towards Enlightenment, which is an endeavor to make you and us familiar with an easy and fluent explanation of God's final scripture to all mankind, the Noble Quran, that was revealed to the last and greatest of all messengers, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. As you know, after completing explanation of Surah Munafiqun, we have taken explanation of the next surah, that is Surah Taqabun, which is number 64 in the serial order of compilation of the Noble Quran. Revealed in Medina, it has 18 ayahs and takes its name from the word Yawmut Taqabun in ayah 9, which means the day of mutual loss and gain, and refers to the day of resurrection and judgment as the day of dispossession, since on that day, everyone will try to save oneself and put the blame on others. For those who abandon faith and choose to disbelieve, they shall lose paradise and be thrown into hellfire, cheated forever from felicity by their own souls and their leaders. Those who believe shall gain paradise against all the attempts of the unbelievers to distract them in the world from faith and goodness, because of their guidance by God and His messengers to steer away from hellfire. The surah opens with a description of God's majesty, power, wisdom, and knowledge. It reminds the disbelievers of the miserable end of those who disbelieved before them and decisively refutes their denial of the resurrection. The surah urges the believers to be wary but forgiving of the enemies they may have within their own families, and inspires them to remain steadfast and to spend in God's cause. We have already explained ayahs 1 to 6 of this surah in our last episode. And today, we present you explanation of ayahs 7 to 12. So let us start with ayahs 7 and 8, which read,
زعم الذين كفروا أن لن يبعثوا قل بلى وربي لتبعثن ثم لتنبؤن بما عملتم وذلك على الله يسير فآمنوا بالله ورسوله والنور الذي أنزلنا والله بما تعملون خبير.
The faithless claim that they will not be resurrected. Say, yes, by my Lord, you will surely be resurrected. Then you will be informed of what you did, and that is easy for Allah. So have faith in Allah and His Prophet and the light which we have sent down. And Allah is well aware of what you do. If you might recall, in the previous episode of this program, last month, we said the Almighty Creator has power over all and everything and has granted human beings the freedom to differentiate between right and wrong, which means the consequences of their words and actions rest upon them. We also said that the creation of the universe is not haphazard and unplanned, but rather in accordance with specific aim. This means the Almighty Creator is aware of our secret deeds and hidden intentions and motives, and it is only the proper cognizance of God that inspires us to do good deeds and prevents us from committing sins. The ayahs that we recited to you now mean to say that the faithless deny the resurrection and are thus totally unprepared for the final judgment. God commands the prophet to inform them of the certainty of the day of resurrection on which all the people will be raised to life to see the report card of their deeds, on the basis of which they will either be rewarded or punished. As Ayah 8 informs us, we should have firm faith in our loving Creator and obey whatever has been commanded by the Prophet, who is accompanied by the celestial light for our clear guidance. These ayahs teach us that, number one, it is lack of faith which makes people deny eventuality of the day of resurrection and thus bring eternal damnation upon themselves. Number two, every minute deed of ours is recorded by the angels for presentation on the day of resurrection to determine reward or punishment. Number three, it is all within the infinite power of the Almighty Creator to raise the dead back to life, even if they had become rotten bones and dust. And number four, the ayahs of the Quran are light to enable us to come out of darkness and proceed towards the ultimate truth. Now let us listen to ayahs 9 and 10 of Surah Taghabun.
يَوْمَ يَجْمَعُكُمْ لِيَوْمِ الْجَمْعِ ذَلِكَ يَوْمُ التَّغَابُنِ وَمَنْ يُؤْمِنْ بِاللَّهِ وَيَعْمَلْ صَالِحًا يُكَفِّرْ عَنْهُ سَيِّئَاتِهِ وَيُدْخِلْهُ جَنَّاتٍ تَجْرِي مِنْ تَحْتِهَا الْأَنْهَارُ خَالِدِينَ فِيهَا أَبَدًا ذَلِكَ الْفَوْزُ الْعَظِيمُ والذين كفروا وكذبوا بآياتنا أولئك أصحاب النار خالدين فيها وبئس المصير.
The day when he will gather you for the day of gathering, that will be a day of dispossession for the disbelievers. And whoever has faith in Allah and acts righteously shall be absolved of misdeeds and admitted into gardens with streams running in them, to remain therein forever. That is the great success. But as for those who are faithless and deny our signs, they shall be the inmates of the fire, to remain in it forever, and it is an evil destination. These ayahs refer to another feature of the Day of Resurrection, which is actually the name of this surah. It means taqabun, or dispossession of the disbelievers when they are raised to life and regret the loss they have incurred upon themselves because of their wicked ways during worldly life. The virtuous who are rewarded with gardens where streams of fresh water flow will also regret of not having done more good deeds while alive in order to achieve higher rewards when they see the unimaginable bounties of the hereafter. Ayah 10 warns the faithless of the punishment for their disbelief and death in the state of sins and agnosticism, saying that they will be cast into the fires of hell, which is indeed an evil destination. These ayahs teach us the following points. Number one, while alive, we should make the best of the opportunity which God has granted us by doing good deeds and abstaining from evil, so as to avoid the great regret of dispossession on the day of judgment. Number two, Allah, the most merciful, not only rewards the true believers for their virtuous deeds, but also absolves them of the misdeeds they might have committed and sought forgiveness. Number three, since the entry into paradise requires purity and cleansing from the filth of sins, in some cases the erring believers might have to pass temporarily through hell. And number four, everyone is in pursuit of success and happiness, but true success and happiness will be gained only through faith in God and doing of righteous deeds. In conclusion of today's episode of Path Towards Enlightenment, here are ayahs 11 and 12 of Surah Taghabun.
ما أصاب من مصيبة إلا بإذن الله ومن يؤمن بالله يهدي قلبه والله بكل شيء عليم وأطيعوا الله وأطيعوا الرسول فَإِن تَوَلَّيْتُمْ فَإِنَّمَا عَلَى رَسُولِنَا الْبَلَاغُ الْمُبِينَ.
No affliction visits anyone except by Allah's leave. Whoever has faith in Allah, He guides his or her heart, and Allah has knowledge of all things. So, obey Allah and His Prophet. But if you turn away, then our Prophet's duty is only to communicate in clear terms. Disasters and problems are part of the worldly life of all human beings, whether believers or disbelievers. This means the faithful ought to be patient in the face of trials and tribulations, since nothing happens except by the will of God, and those with firm faith will surely be guided by the all-merciful Creator, who has knowledge of all and everything. Among the signs of the true believers is their obedience to Almighty Allah through observance of whatever the Prophet has taught and preached. The duty of the prophets is only to convey the message of God to mankind and explain it through clear proofs, rather than forcing people to become Muslims. From these ayahs, we learn that, number one, faith in God helps us to be firm and steadfast in the face of hardships and calamities, rather than becoming impatient and losing hope in divine mercy. Number two, lofty concepts like patience, trust, satisfaction, and submission to God are factors that guide believers and make them overcome disasters. And number three, prophets have the duty of proclaiming Allah's message in clear terms. They do not impose faith on the people, since God has granted free will to the human race with warnings to discern good from evil, on the basis of which will be the final reward and punishment.
Sound from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
And welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Now, the Israeli regime has been creating terror for more than 70 years now. The regime was founded on terrorist attacks, murder, and the displacement of Palestinians, both Christian and Muslim. Between 1947 and 1949, around 750,000 Palestinians out of 1.9 million were thrown out of their country. And since that time, Palestinians have witnessed many massacres and more death and destruction, which still continues today. Sunday, there were three more Palestinians killed, as this year may set a record for the number of Palestinians murdered by the regime. All of this has happened as the so-called international community looks the other way. Well, I'd like to welcome my guest, who's going to help me look at all of this on the Spotlight. Ken Stone, Executive Committee Member, Hamilton Coalition to Stop the War, and Executive Committee Member, Syria Support Movement. And Sandas al-Assad, Lebanese journalist out of Beirut. Thank you both for being with us. Let me start this off in Ontario. Ken, though the Israeli regime has always been extreme, why do we see its behavior reflecting what appears to be a whole different level of impunity right now?
I think the whole new level of impunity can be attributed to several things. In the first place, I think that Israel has witnessed in the last several months that its war, its part in the U.S. regime change war on Syria, which started in March 2011, is failing, and it's failing badly. And so they are, I think, desperate to do what they can to prevent Syria from getting back on its feet and rejoining the world community. So the reason for those Israeli attacks on Syria, those pinprick attacks, are to try and hamper Syria from reconstruction. And it's partly to goad Syria into opening up a second front against Israel, rather than focusing on the occupations of the Syrian territory by the U.S. in the eastern third of Syria and by Al-Qaeda affiliates in the northwest corner of Syria, in Idlib province, and of course the Turkish incursion along the complete northern border of Syria. So they're trying to distract, the Israelis are trying to distract the Syrians with these pinprick attacks. And they are getting more and more desperate because I think their imperial masters are also getting more desperate. And by imperial master, I mean the empire, the U.S. government, which is responsible for the regime change war on Syria, has signaled by sending U.S. General Mark Milley to an illegal U.S. military base in eastern Syria last week, that the U.S. intends to fight on to control the petroleum and wheat resources of Syria. And at the same time, the U.S. government in the House of Representatives reaffirmed that they would keep their sanctions on Syria despite the earthquake. And they turned down Congressman Getz's attempt to have the U.S. withdraw its troops from Syria. So all these things indicate a heightening of tension.
Okay, well, what about that, Sundas? You heard what Ken said about the desperation. Do you agree that there's a desperation, not only Tel Aviv, but Washington also? Give me your take on that.
Exactly true. First of all, Salam, thank you for having me. We have recently, since the failure of the 2006 war against Lebanon, and then the tries to evoke sectarian skirmishes here in West Asia, especially in Lebanon, in Syria, in Iraq, followed by the aggression against Syria and the aggression against Yemen, also the suppression of the popular uprisings in Bahrain, in eastern Hejaz. We have seen this imperialist upset because all their trials, all their attempts have failed to make the people of the region to make them force them into submission. The people of the region truly believe in their cause, truly believe in their just cause, their righteous. Cause that this land is theirs, especially the Palestinians. Mm-hmm. We know that 2 years ago, the Persian Gulf repressive monarchs openly declared their previously established relations with the occupation entity. So suddenly we see this. We see the failure. How this agreement with the Zionists, which is between quotations called normalization. I don't believe in the naming normalization, but these ties that that has been declared with the enemy have proven that they are complete failure, that the only way to deal with this apartheid regime is resistance, mm-hmm. because this regime is occupying lands for an indigenous nation that includes both Muslims and Christians. They have looted their resources. They have attacked the peoples of the region, whether in Lebanon, in Syria, in Iraq, in Yemen. Also, they have intervened in the affairs of the Iranian people. So we have seen nothing but failures of this this synthetic, vicious scheme, which Condoleezza Rice called the birth of a new Middle East in 2006 war, because those people have the right, because those people are not, because this land is ours, this land, this occupation is odd to our land, to our geography, to our demography. So the failure of the West has tried in different ways to force the people of the region to submit, and surrender. But the only option of the people of the region is to expel this illegitimate entity from this region.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, Ken, do you think that Israel is imploding because not just a deterioration, deteriorating situation with the Palestinians themselves, but also from Israeli Jews who are dissatisfied with the current government and have been protesting for 10 weeks now? Is this added pressure on this regime right now?
Indeed, it is. I think 250,000 people were in the streets of Tel Aviv yesterday,
right?
Complaining about, demonstrating about the proposed changes to the Israeli Supreme Court that are being undertaken by Netanyahu, even in defiance of the Israeli president, Herzog. I think there's a huge conflict in Israel right now over what their democracy, and I put this in quotation marks because it's a democracy only for Jews living in citizens who live in the 1948 boundaries. It's a dictatorship, a military dictatorship for the people, and an occupation for the people in Gaza and in the West Bank. But the people who live in Israel proper are really upset because they see that even their democracy is being undermined, and the nature of the state may change. Religious parties may end up with undue influence, and a lot of people are upset about that. At the same time, hundreds upon hundreds of Israeli officers have refused duty and quit their posts. So we can see that there is a lot of chaos going on within the state of Israel. And that's a further reason, by the way, that the Israeli government unleashes these attacks on Palestinians in Gaza, in the West Bank, and attacks Israel. It's always been good business, good PR for the Israeli government to be seen bombing Arabs and killing Arabs. It sells at home, and it makes the government popular to their bases. It's a sickening thing, but it's true.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Well, let me just stay with you, Ken, because you just said something interesting, that's the very popular when basically Israel bomb Arabs. So when we see the mass numbers of people turning out in Tel Aviv, those same people who are complaining about this extremist government, would they be the same ones that would support this extremist government if there is more a direct conflict, like more bombing of Syria or other countries? These same individuals who claim to be against extremism, do you think that they would actually continue to support Tel Aviv?
Regrettably, I don't think that the people who are demonstrating in the streets sympathize necessarily with the plight of the Palestinian people, mm-hmm. or the people mm-hmm. of Yemen or the people of Syria. Right. I think that this is a domestic issue for them. And they, as Gideon Levy, an Israeli journalist, said, when he went out to these demonstrations, they had not a word to say about the Palestinians living under occupation.
Okay. All right. Well, Sandas, what does that say to you about all of those, or the majority of those who are living in this country, on the one hand, trying to show that they have democracy and they're against this, what they're calling an extremist government, but on the other hand, they are also living on usurped land and supporting this regime? Your analysis.
Exactly. Sister, let us remember what Sayyid Nasrallah said in the year 2000, directly on the day of the liberation. He described the Zionist entity, the Zionist enemy, which for long had been described as the army that can be defeated, or the army of the elites. He described it that it's weaker than the web of the spider, than a spider's web. Mm-hmm. Because those settlers who are occupying Palestinians have been brought by the British colonization and by the French colonizers from different parts of the world. They have nothing in common, and this is just. This is a simple justification that those has no right in Palestine. They come from different backgrounds. They come from different countries. They don't belong to this land, and they have nothing in harmony. They have nothing in harmony with each other. Yes, they need democracy. Between two quotations, they claim that they are suppressed by their own government. And on the contrary, they approve killing the Palestinians, targeting the Syrians, the Lebanese, and creating havoc in the region. And this is a clear evidence that this entity will not. I believe that this entity, as also Sayyid Nasrallah has described it, it's a temporary entity, and I don't think that it will last more than decade now, because all the details that are provided so far proves that this regime is collapsing. This regime is weaker, and this message must be understood by the monarchs in the region who are normalizing ties with this weak entity. How can this weak entity help you protect your thrones when itself is a weak and vulnerable and will not last? Mm-hmm. So your steps of normalization and your moves will not help you if you complete suppressing your people and you complete ties or building these dreams with this enemy.
Okay. Well, Ken, Israeli terrorism has been involved with destabilization from its creation. Not only does it oppress the natives of the land, the Palestinians, but it also creates havoc in neighboring countries and beyond by committing various types of assassinations and terrorism. So what needs to be done to stop this? We see that basically, mum is the word in dealing with the so-called international community. So what needs to happen in your perspective, Ken, to change this around?
I think people in the Western countries of Europe and North America have to pressure their governments to stop enabling Israeli war crimes against the Palestinians and against neighboring countries. Without this enabling at the United Nations, and without the arms and without the funding that's sent every year to prop up the Israeli regime, it would not last very long. In Canada, we have a very good example of it. We have been pushing the Canadian government for a long time to end the charitable status of Israeli organizations in Canada, which funnel hundreds of millions of dollars out of Canada every year. With a stroke of the paper, a pen, the Canadian government could end that. It could end the free trade relationship with a stroke of the pen with Israel. It could end the security arrangement with a stroke of the pen. The European Union could end the special status that Israel has as a non-member of the EU. It gives it preferential status. All these things are levers that the governments in the West could use to put pressure on Israel, and it's up to the people in the West to push their governments into putting some penalties on the Israelis for their intransigence.
Well, Sundas, with the various type of terrorist act that the Israeli regime commits against various groups, do you think that in actuality it is actually strengthening and uniting resistance groups and their resilience against the regime?
Exactly, that's what's happening. The more the Israelis commit crimes, the more the atrocities are committed by this regime, the more the resistance fronts are getting united and are getting more close to their goal, that we can't live in this region without fighting this enemy. And here I must mention something, that this this occupation, this apartheid regime, doesn't only impose that on West Asia or the people of the world. It imposes a clear and a serious threat to the entire world, because its war crimes, its terrorism will affect the entire world, because you know that this regime that doesn't care about that has no ethics, has no values. It's part of the great empire. It's part from the great imperialist scheme that tries hard to loot all the resources and the lands of the region. So this regime has failed in many ways in reaching its goals, because the resistance people are getting more aware, and this what Imam Khomeini said in the beginning of the Islamic Revolution, that he said that kill us, our people will get more aware. Yes, our people are getting more aware and are getting more conscious about their cause and about the nature of this apartheid regime that has no values, is apartheid regime that is occupying the rent and creating many killing the people of the region. We see what the occupation did in Syria. Also, we see what it did in Iraq. I believe that the more the atrocities that are committed, the more our resistance fronts are getting more strengthening, more, and will be able to expel this terrorist temporary regime from our region.
Okay, and on that note, I'd like to thank both of you for being with me, but we're out of time. Out of Hamilton, Ontario, Ken Stone, Executive Committee Member, Hamilton Coalition to Stop the War, and Executive Committee Member, Syria Support Movement. And out of Beirut, Sundas Salasat.